Let me encourage you to take your Bibles and go back with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 8 this evening. Ecclesiastes chapter 8. I want you to think back for a moment to 2016. It's forever ago, right? So much has happened since then. I would be really surprised if you actually knew the answer to my question, but I'll pose it to you nonetheless. Anybody know what Oxford Dictionary's word of the year was in 2016? Maybe the better question is, does anybody care? Well, since it got raised, hopefully you have at least a little bit of interest. The word of the year for Oxford Dictionaries in 2016 was post-truth. Post-truth. A word that I think since that time has probably become more common and more familiar. I would guess a number of you in here are like, yeah, post-truth. Interesting. Shortly thereafter, 2017, the Pew Research Center did a study to begin to investigate the truth and misinformation found online. To go, in the years ahead, are we going to be able to believe more of what we hear or less of what we hear? And they had experts weighing in through this study to go, yes, I'm optimistic. I believe that with advances in technology, we're going to be able to believe more of what we read online. And then you had others going, no, I really don't think that that's possible. I think we're going to be able to believe less of what we read online. I'll leave the verdict of that up to you now, 7 years later. But I do think we've become more familiar with words like fake news. We've become more attentive to the editing that's done by major media companies as well as social media, going what gets out, what doesn't get out, what gets marked, what gets fact-checked along the way in attempts to say, hey, is this true or is it not? And it really, in their mind, and often the way it's presented, depends on who you listen to. When I was reading an article kind of summarizing the Pew Research Center's investigation on this, two things really just jumped out at me. One was they said one of the biggest problems we face is human nature. I thought, wow, that's actually pretty insightful from a source that's not looking at this from a spiritual biblical perspective to say human nature is implicitly selfish and believes what it wants to believe, regardless of whether it's accurate or not. And they're saying, that's a problem, and beginning to weigh out as to why that's a problem. And I'm like, actually, biblically, I agree. The other one that they pointed out that it brings us even more to where we're getting in Ecclesiastes in just a moment is not only is human nature a problem, but human limitations are a problem. And like the human capacity to keep up with all of the information coming your way is just far too limited. As I read back through that this week, now 7 years later, I thought, wow, how truthful it is. To go, it's hard sometimes to go, what's really accurate? What's not accurate? What should I trust? What should I not trust? Should I even care? And to realize that mankind is both limited and flawed in our ability to process it. As we get further into Ecclesiastes chapter 8 tonight, Solomon's going to confront us even more with this idea that we live in an upside-down world. And sometimes it's incredibly hard to live rightly. And in the midst of that, he's issued these two predominant instructions in Ecclesiastes chapter 8. The first we looked at this morning, saying simply, as you walk through life, submit to the authority of government. I counsel thee to keep the king's commandment, right? And he talked about some of the challenges with that a little bit this morning. But tonight, I believe we come to the even more important instruction because it actually drives the first one to say not just submit to the authority of government, but even more so rest in the sovereignty of God. Life is marked by difficulty. It's marked by uncertainty. It is marked by fallibility. And in the midst of that, we would do well to orient our compass, if you will, to be weighted down by a faith, a trust, a rest in the sovereignty of God. Really, we could use any of those words almost interchangeably tonight to realize that this rest is something that is chosen. It is active. It's saying, God, I'm going to be at peace in you. God, I'm going to choose to trust you, but I am also going just to choose to rest in you. Now, if you were to break down the two sections from where we are this morning to where we are this evening, submission to human authority highlights man's ignorance. We can't know it all, and so we can't always make the right decision, and we can't always get it right. When it comes to resting in God's sovereignty, we're not only pointed once again to our ignorance, but we're also pointed to our impotence or our inability to solve everything that life throws our way, all the problems that come from a sin-cursed world as well. And so Solomon, I believe, wisely, rightly directs us to fearing God, to his sovereignty. And I'll admit, I was thinking about this a little bit this afternoon. We hit certain themes in Ecclesiastes over and over. You know that. Fear God. Enjoy the life he's given. Know that judgment's coming. You're like, okay, Pastor, I've heard those before. I know those. You're going to hear them again tonight. But I hope that along the way, as you listen to Solomon, you realize that he is touching different areas of our life whereby along the way we should go, actually, yeah, in those kinds of situations, I agree. I need to see that. I need to think that way rightly. So he's laid it out, for example, as to what about when life is going well in prosperity? And here's the challenges that come with that, and here's the right response. What about when you come out of an endeavor to live apart from God, and you say, I'm just going to live it up for me? Well, he touched that, Ecclesiastes 1 into Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and here's how we respond and fear God and live rightly there. What about when adversity comes? What about when injustice is present? What about when it comes to worship, like what we saw at the beginning of Ecclesiastes chapter 5? And tonight he's going to touch further on the themes to realize that sometimes authority does get it wrong, and our ability to extend ourselves is limited as well. So tonight we look at this second theme, wisdom rests in the sovereignty of God. We looked at four recognitions this morning, only two this evening, in verses 8 through 11. We come to verse 8. The first recognition is this: you can't determine the length of your life. Wisdom rests in the sovereignty of God because you can't determine the length of your life. He says, there is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death. There is no discharge in that war, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. Solomon touches a couple different issues in life, from trying to say, you know what, I just want to continue to live on indefinitely, to know death is knocking at my door, to know the fact that I'm in battle, to know wickedness has caught up with me and the day of death is at hand. And he basically is telling us we cannot extend our lives indefinitely. God is the giver and the sustainer of life. Colossians chapter 1, from a New Testament perspective, reminds us of that very clearly, as well as Romans chapter 11, verse 36. To say God's sovereign over all. I think of it the way the words of the Apostle Paul states it in the book of Acts, to say it's in him that we live, we move, we have our being. To go, it is my connection to God that gives me life. He's the one who dictates its span. He is sovereign over all. And I believe we live in a day where mankind wants to think, someday I'll find the fountain of youth. Someday we'll figure out a way. Even just Melinda and I were driving around Friday, and she was telling me about a news article in this genetic process and trying to reverse aging in animals. And I'm thinking, like, okay, this is way beyond me. But it's an attempt to go, let's limit the impact of sin. Let's limit the deterioration of life. Let's find a way to extend it. And Solomon is just reminding us we cannot determine the length of our lives. God is sovereign over all. And so we say, God, I'm going to number my days. I'm going to apply my heart to wisdom. I am going to seek to live for you with the life that you give. So we rest in God's sovereignty, knowing he knows the bounds of your life. He knows the bounds of my life. You can't determine the length of your life. Second recognition, you can't resolve every problem of injustice. You can't resolve every problem in justice. Trust God, rest in his sovereignty, because there are problems out there. And you're not going to be able to solve all of them. Now, I will say at the outset, that isn't an excuse to avoid standing for right. We do want to see right done. We do want to be salt and light in this world. But we are limited. We do get things wrong, as do others. And as we look at this idea of you can't resolve every problem of injustice, I want to summarize the section in the verses that follow, verses 9 to 11, with three statements that I think represent Solomon's spirit and what he's saying. First, as we look at this statement, this idea of you can't resolve every problem of injustice, Solomon says, I've seen power abused. I've seen power mishandled. Verse 9, all this have I seen. Applied my heart unto every work that is done under the sun. There is a time wherein one man ruleth over another to his own hurt. Once again, we're listening to Solomon speak very comprehensively to say, I've looked at every work done under the sun, and I've realized there are times where people who are in authority use it to their own advantage and harm others in the process. I won't again take the time to go back tonight, but if you looked at Ecclesiastes 3 and Ecclesiastes 4, second half of chapter 3, first half of chapter 4, he begins to talk about those who oppress others that get paid off in the process of trying to make decisions. Here he returns to a similar theme and says, there are times where one man uses his authority, he rules over another in harm to one. He uses his power for oppression or his authority for abuse and wrong. Again, we looked at this morning Romans 13, 1 Peter 2 briefly. This idea goes against the God-ordained purpose of government. To stand for right, to the praise of doing well, the punishment of evildoers. You can't resolve every problem of injustice. Why? Solomon says, first, I've seen power abused. Secondly, he says, I've seen wickedness honored. I've seen wickedness honored. Verse 10. So I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of the holy, and they were forgotten in the city where they had done so. This is also vanity. Someone's like, I look and this doesn't seem right. The language here admittedly is a bit difficult, but Solomon, in essence, points to the funeral of the wicked, particularly their burial, and he says, here's a time where they're being honored. They're getting full due process after life, and so they're being honored rather than despised. And yet there's great irony in what he says, because he paints the picture of the wicked as having been worshipers at one time. I mean, they died in wickedness, even though they used to go in and out of the place of worship, the holy place. And he's like, but that's all forgotten. Their hypocrisy is overlooked. It just seems right. And it just seems wrong and unfair. Those who are truly righteous are ignored. Retribution or justice is seemingly absent. In fact, as the text unfolds into our third thought, he's going to point out it's because judgment was slow. They died in their wickedness, even though they had turned from right worship. They're honored in the end. It just doesn't seem good, but it's because judgment was delayed. Saying you can't resolve every problem of injustice. Why? I've seen power abused. I've seen wickedness honored. Third, I've seen justice delayed. And maybe we should add to that third statement, not only have I seen justice delayed, but as a result, evil increased. Wrongdoing increased. Verse 11 says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Instead of having the right exercise of authority, he's like, it's not happening, it's delayed. And as a result, wickedness is abounding. This doesn't seem right, he says. And yet he's saying, pointing to the reality, we can't solve all of those problems. Within the God-ordained government, consequences should occur, should not be delayed. He, you know, as we talked about in Romans 13 this morning, he is a minister of God, he bears not the sword in vain. Right? It speaks to justice. It speaks to right consequences. And Solomon's saying that because that doesn't happen, that fallibility, that sinfulness in mankind has his heart set in him to do evil. I will just remind us as well, as maybe an aside, because we've used this even in our own thinking, in our own home, but to realize that means when we have an opportunity to stand for justice, to execute with consequences, we need to do so quickly, rightly. To go, hey, you know what? This happened. Here's the right response. Here's the right consequence. Let's get after it. Let's not overlook it. Let's make sure that the demands of justice are satisfied. Say that certainly we want to be true when it comes to governmental authority, but I would even say by way of application, it can be applied and true with parental authority. To go, hey, we wouldn't want it to be true in our homes that because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, because there's not consequences meted out, heart is just bent to go, you know what? I can get away with it. It is okay. Solomon's looking around. He says, you can't resolve every problem of injustice. Why? I've seen power abused. I've seen wickedness honored. I've seen justice delayed. He's laid out. Here's my recognitions as I rest in God's sovereignty to go, I can't extend my life. I can't right every wrong. So what's the response? You've heard it many times already today, both this morning and this evening. But as we work our way through the final verses of chapter 8, from verse 12 down through verse 17, we want to look at this response of resting in God's sovereignty. First, we're pointed to his confidence. We'll get to his conclusion near the end of our time together. First, we're pointed to his confidence. He says in verse 12, though a sinner do evil 100 times, and his days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, which fear before him. In that verse, we start to see Solomon lift back out of where he's been recently. He's like, hey, look, you can't extend your life. We can't control that. I've seen the wicked honored in their burial. Justice is late to occur, but here's what I know. And he lays out his confidence. We could summarize his confidence this way. God will do what is right. So fear him. God will do what is right. So fear him. It doesn't matter, he says, if the sinner continues on over and over and over and seems to be getting away with it, and it seems like life just goes on normally. He says, here's what I know to be true. It will be well with them that fear God. It will be well with those who have this life-orienting reverence for God. You know, I want my thinking about how I process everything around me to be filtered through. What would God say? How would God want me to respond? What does faith look like here? What does trust look like here? We touched it briefly last week as we kind of diverted into Romans 11 and Romans 12. But there are times where it's like, you know what? I don't have all the facts. I can't know all the facts. And it's okay. It's actually a good thing. And I go, you know what? This isn't something that I can explain and work through logically. I'm too limited in my fallibility. I believe God is, and he rewards those who diligently seek him. So I'm going to live with that life-orienting reverence for God. Say, God, I'm trusting you. I'm seeking to walk with you, believing you will do what is right, regardless of what anybody else is doing. So I was preparing for tonight. I found my mind going back to Psalm 73. Right, we've been there, I think, a fair number of times, or at least referenced it a fair number of times over the last year to realize, you know, coming out of that summer in the Psalms where we went to different Psalms, the psalmist in Psalm 73 is like, look, truly, God's good to Israel. But as for me, my steps are slipping out from underneath me. He's like, I'm not sure I can go on. Why? I was envious at the wicked. I saw the prosperity that they're going through. He's like, there's no pain in their death. They seem to be doing great. It's like, and I'm struggling over here. And yet, when he comes back to worshiping God, understanding who God is, understanding that God does judge right and wrong as you get to the end of Psalm 73, he says, okay, now I'm good. I'm settled. Because it is about a life-orienting reverence for God. His confidence here is God will do what is right, so fear him. He states it towards those who are fearing God in verse 12, but contrary to that perception in verse 12, he does note in verse 13, evil will eventually be judged. Like verse 12, he's like, hey, they're just going on and on. It seems like their day is being prolonged. But then he says this, but it shall not be well with the wicked. Neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not before God. He's like, it's just an illusion. It seems like they're okay. It seems like they're in control. It seems like they're managing life well. And he's like, but it's not true. It's not within their control. It's not within their power. It is within God's hand. He will face judgment in God's time frame. Why? Because he doesn't orient life around him. He doesn't fear God. Instead, he does what he wants to do. So his confidence is, Solomon's confidence is, God will do what is right. So fear him. Live with a life-orienting reverence of him. Secondly, as we look at his confidence, things will seem wrong, but trust him. Things will seem wrong, but trust him. We've touched this theme already, but let's unpack it as we go to verse 14 in particular. He says, there is a vanity which is done upon the earth. I believe this use of vanity here, some translations handle this way, is a little different than some of the others along the way. He's like, this is really hard for us to grasp. Our attempts to get this are a little bit futile. Some commentators refer to it as an enigma. Like, this is something I just can't get. It doesn't seem right, seems wrong, but he calls him to trust anyway. He says, here's what seems wrong, that there be just men unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Again, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of righteousness. I said, this also is vanity. It's like, this doesn't seem right. The world seems upside down. Again, even when we feel that way, what do? We say, God, I'm going to trust you. God, I'm going to believe you. And maybe it's just where the Lord took me. I don't have any desire to try to be the Holy Spirit for you. But again, I think of where we've lived the last several years. You can pick up any number of issues politically, societally, whatever you want. And it's like, well, what do you believe about this? And what do you believe about this? And you get people that are like way on opposite sides of the spectrum. It's like, well, you know what? At the end of the day, God, I'm going to rest in you. I'm going to study things the best I can. I'm going to use the brain that you've given me, but ultimately I know I can't figure it all out. God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to rest in you. The individual here is looking, going, it seems like justice is upside down. But you know what? God, I'm going to rest in you. I'm going to trust you. You told me to submit to government. You told me to rest in your sovereignty. I'm reminded again of the words to the song the choir sang. I referenced briefly there in Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, right? For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts higher than your thoughts. We can look at any number of situations in life and go, you know, if it was me, I would do it like this. And God says, no, I'm going to do it like that. So that we learn to rest in him, to trust him. Trust recognizes God is just. Trust doesn't seek to take God's place. Trust says, God, I want you to work in your time and in your way. Solomon's confidence is this: God will do what is right. Things will seem wrong, but trust him. So finally, we come to his conclusion. We've looked at his confidence. Let's look at his conclusion in verses 15 to 17. Two very recurrent thoughts. We come to verse 15. He says, then I commended mirth, idea of joy. Then I commended mirth because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. For that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life which God giveth him under the sun. In context of just chapter 8, like if we had done no other study before, we do no other study afterwards, we're like, man, Solomon, that sounds incredibly selfish. You know, there's problems out there, and well, just go ahead and enjoy life. But I would remind you a number of times along the way, he's turned and said, this is what God has given to you. This is the life that he set before you, and so you rest in God, and you enjoy the life that he's given. as a symbol of your trust, or rather as a living out of your trust. In fact, I'll turn back for just a moment to the first time this came up. If you remember in Ecclesiastes 2, he walks through chapter 1 going, I tried wisdom and that failed me from a human perspective. I tried all kinds of pleasure beginning of chapter 2, that failed me as well. It's all vanity. And there's no real mention of God other than a pessimistic mention of God in chapter 1, verse 13, where he's like, when I try to figure everything out, God just works me over. It wears me out. But then he lifts out of that pessimism, that vanity, in chapter 2, verse 24, when he says, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Verse 26, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather, to heap up that which he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. He hit this theme in chapter 2. He actually hits it briefly at the end of chapter 3. He hits it again at the end of chapter 5. Now we're at the end of chapter 8. And he's saying, enjoy the life God has given to you, how he has directed, how he has planned, what he has given, what he knows. He's saying this now, having just come out of a section in chapter 6 and chapter 7 to go, God may have prosperity for you, enjoy the life he's given. God may have adversity for you, enjoy the life he's given. You may see injustice that occurs, enjoy the life that he's given. Rest in the sovereignty of God. That comes to our second thought, that as I just stated it, his conclusion, number one, enjoy the life that God has given. Number two, rest in the sovereignty of God. He says in verse 16, when I applied mine heart to know wisdom, to see the business that is done upon the earth, for also there is that neither day nor night seeth sleep with his eyes. Like, I'm diligently pursuing this, trying to figure this out. That goes back to that pursuit of wisdom, even in chapter 1, where he's like, God just wears me out. It's a sore travail that God hath given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. He's like, I tried to pursue wisdom, but here's what I realized. Verse 17, I beheld all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun, because though a man labor to seek it out, yet shall he shall not find it. Yea, further, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. You know, within God's wisdom, within God's command, he gave us a created world and said, you exercise dominion over it. And so we work very diligently and rightly to go, God, we want to discern what's going on here. We want to study. We want to learn. We want to figure. We want to utilize. We want to master. And that's a good thing. But on the other hand, when it comes to God's work and what God does and how God decides and how God plans, it's beyond our ability to figure out. It brings us past our ability to help us realize our limitations, to go, God, I have to trust you. I can't discern all that you're doing. I can't understand all that I find. You're beyond me. But I believe that you are good, that you are trustworthy, and that you are just. Again, I would remind you, we've touched it many times before, but it is a good thing for mankind to have a God he cannot fully understand. To go, I want a God who's bigger than my mind can wrap itself around so that I have to trust, so that I don't lean on my own understanding, so that we don't go, I figured it out. And so we hit all kinds of truth where it's like, okay, the Bible teaches this and this. I can't reconcile both those. Like, you know what, God, I'm just going to trust you because you told me these things are true. God, I'm going to rest in your sovereignty. If we summarize where we've been this morning, even the weeks past to today, tonight, we say there are days that you endure, days of hardship, days of suffering. There are days also to enjoy. In the midst of all of those things, we're not going to be able to figure it all out. We're too limited. We're too ignorant. We can't solve every problem and right every wrong. We'll be used of God where we can. But there are two simple actions in wisdom that we do. God, there's human authority that you put here on this earth. And Solomon said, I've counseled you, keep the king's commandments. Submit to the authority of government. But then secondly, rest in the sovereignty of God. Solomon says, here's what I know. It will be well with them that fear him. There are situations in life you're like, so how is it going to be well for me right now? God, what does well look like in this? God, when I went to the doctor, this happened at work, when this is going on in our home, God, what does well look like right now? Say, we just trust him. Say, here's what I know. It will be well. He's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. It will be well for those who fear him. So God, I'm going to rest in your sovereignty, enjoying the life that you've given me. Let's pray.